MBSFM.com presents Blind Line with Jonathan Mosen, where the world turns on, surfs in, and speaks out.
Good Sunday morning from New Zealand. Thanks for tuning our way. I hope that you're well and that you'll be with us for the duration on what promises to be an interesting Blind Line. We will be taking your calls via buddy phone and regular telephone after our interviews are finished, but we do have a few of them today. Shortly, we'll be hearing briefly from Paul Edwards, the president of the American Council of the Blind. As we've been saying on the email list over the last 24 hours or so, Paul has a special announcement for us. I hope you'll find that interesting, and it will no doubt be the topic of considerable discussion when we get to the talk section of the program and we come to your comments. You'll also probably want to talk about what we've all been talking about for the last week and a half or so, and this is the major feature of our program today. This is the decision of the National Federation of the Blind to sue America Online, using the Americans with Disabilities Act and claiming that cyberspace, or America Online in particular, is a public place and therefore should be making accommodations under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So we'll be speaking with Curtis Chong of the National Federation of the Blind. We'll also hear a screen reader vendor's perspective on this. We'll be joined by Doug Joffrey of GW Micro, and we'll also hear at the end from Paul Edwards, again of the American Council of the Blind, asking the question, can we expect to have cross-consumer organizational support on the AOL lawsuit? Are they going to back the NFB on this one? And then it will be your chance to phone in and sound off about any issue that we've discussed or something completely different. So time now to speak with Paul Edwards of the American Council of the Blind. Nice to have you back on the program, Paul. And you have something pretty unique to tell us and pretty special to tell us. Over to you.
The American Council of the Blind is extremely excited by the prospect of setting up internet radio broadcasting, and are particularly excited by the fact that we've been able to persuade one of internet broadcasting's leading proponents to take the lead in helping us to set up the program. So on behalf of the American Council of the Blind, it gives me great pleasure to welcome the new managing director, chief disc jockey, and chief engineer of ACB Radio, Mr. Jonathan Mosen, formerly of MBS FM.
Well, I haven't had an introduction like that for a long time. This is an exciting partnership, which we hope to get off the ground officially on December the 1st with a new website, and all of that will be revealed in good time. Tell us about your vision for ACB Radio, Paul.
What we're hoping ACB Radio will become is a single source that blind people can use to get all the information they want in easy-to-use audio format. We're hoping that by this time next year, we will have programming that's produced for ACB Radio that will fill a substantial number of hours per week. To begin with, we're going to be using some old-time radio, some ACB broadcasts, and some Blind Line broadcasts in order to fill time. But it is our hope that what we'll end up being able to do over time is to create ACB disc jockeys. To that end, one of the things that we've got on the schedule at this point is for Jonathan to come to our convention a day early in order to provide a full day's training for anywhere from 6 to 8 potential disc jockeys who will have hands-on experience understanding how to do computer-produced programming and how to get that computer-produced programming up and available on the ACB Radio site. By the way, we have registered the domain name. So acbradio.org is now officially ours, and we're hoping at this point to launch on December 1st.
Yes, some people won't get anything at all if they go there now, but we do own it, and something will be happening certainly before December the 1st as we implement things and start testing. But of course, the blindness-related content is not just ACB-specific, is it? We're looking at a much broader vision than that.
Yeah, I would welcome anybody sending any information that relates to blindness or that's produced by blindness. One of the things we're thinking about is there are a number of of computer user groups in the United States who are already producing some real audio content. We hope they'll be prepared to make some of that information available to us. Also, there are a number of blindness consumer organizations in other countries, Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and what we're hoping, Canada as well, what we're hoping is that we can encourage some of these folks to send us material that we can use. And if agencies would like to put material up there that that they think would be of interest, we'd be glad to have that too. While there certainly will be some selection criteria, it's our view that the more information we can put up on ACB radio that will be of interest and value to people who are blind, the better it'll be for people who are blind, and that's our intent.
And it is the intent for ACB Radio to continue to provide for the for Blindline to operate in the foreseeable future.
Absolutely. It's our intention to make Blindline bigger and better than it is. And as is usual in ACB, it is also our intention not to control what the producer of Blindline does, i.e., it is not our intent to make Blindline an organ of the American Council of the Blind. It is our intention that Blindline will continue to be at the forefront of blindness issues, and that it will continue to ask probing and difficult questions, even if those probing and difficult questions get asked to ACB people.
Yes, I suppose that's something that some people will be concerned about. For instance, after we speak with you, we'll be speaking for some time about the NFB's lawsuit with respect to AOL. So you don't see any of that kind of thing changing as ACB takes over?
Not at all. Blindline already has a reputation of being the leading program that explores in an intellectually honest and appropriate way issues that relate to the blind people of the world. And it would be our intent to continue to let Blindline do precisely that.
And with recent innovations, we're able to offer one stream that can be heard by people using Winamp or another MP3 player, as well as the latest version of RealPlayer, so that should open up quite a large audience.
Absolutely, and it is our intent, by the way, to make both of those devices downloadable directly from the ACB radio site, as well as fairly quickly gathering a fair amount of real audio material that will be archived on site that people can download directly.
Right, so you'll be able to hear material on demand or live via the stream that's going out.
Absolutely.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting partnership. I'm delighted that we've been able to reach agreement, and we'll look forward to ACB Radio hopefully starting on December the 1st. Are you going to be on it yourself, Paul? You're going to do a show?
Oh, I'm hoping to. I'm trying to get myself up to speed, but I'd like to do a weekly program if I can, and I don't see any reason why I shouldn't be able to. I just have to find enough time to do a little work to bring myself up to speed using a program called SoundForge, which is what we'll be using primarily for recording content. And once I'm able to do that, then my hope is that absolutely we will have ACB Radio have at least a weekly opportunity. And we're also looking at the possibility, or the probability, in fact, of, in addition to ACB Radio, doing some town hall meetings using other internet technology, hopefully before and perhaps even during our mid-year meeting at ACB. So our feeling is that it isn't only ACB Radio that's going to continue to enhance ACB's presence on the internet. It's also other approaches that will hopefully get more of our members involved, and it will also be available as archived elements on our site.
Well, apart from your lucid opinions on blindness matters, it would also be nice to hear an hour or two a week of your wonderful folk collection.
I'm on your side. I think I have an obligation to the listening public to make them more familiar with the wonderful music they don't get a chance to hear.
We'll look forward to it very much, Paul. Thanks for making the big announcement for us, and I will be providing information about when MBS FM will be going off, because there'll be a short period of transition where nothing will be happening. But we'll look forward to working with you.
Absolutely. And folks, don't forget, old time radio will still be available on ACB radio, so don't think you have to go elsewhere to find that content either.
Well, obviously, I'm absolutely thrilled by
developments, and I'm looking forward to managing ACB Radio, a resource that will hopefully make a real difference to all blind people from around the world. And it also allows us to encourage your participation. So we will be calling for ideas. If you want to be a host on ACB Radio, we expect it will attract quite a significant audience with the resources that ACB has to publicise it, and also the fact that with recent developments, as I said when Paul was on the line there, that we will be able to offer Real Player users access to it as well. It really is going to be a very exciting new venture starting hopefully on December the 1st. Now, for those of you who were kind enough to want MBS FM to continue and put your money where your mouth were, so to speak, some of you have already sent checks. None of them have been cashed and none of them will be, but I want to place on record on this edition of Blindline my sincere thanks for your support. I really didn't expect, when I announced that due to changing personal circumstances it was going to be necessary to shut down the station, that there would be so much support expressed, and I really am grateful for that. But it is exciting that ACB Radio will allow us to deal with a whole range of blindness issues. It will be the place, hopefully, that everyone, not just blind people, but everybody goes for blindness related information on the web in audio format, and it's going to be really exciting. So we'll talk more about that when we get your calls, and if you want to make any comments or ask any questions at the appropriate time, you're most welcome to do that. You're with Blindline. This is MBSFM.com, and incidentally, next week's edition of Blindline will be the closing down party of MBSFM. I promised you that a wee while ago, that we were going to have a closing down party. At that stage, it was going to be something of a sad affair. I think now we can say that we're closing down in triumph, knowing that we're going on to bigger and better things, more resources, the backing of an organisation like the ACB, and it's a win-win situation that I think is very positive. So join us next week. We will do our best to have on that program some of the voices of MBS FM, the people that have really helped to make this happen. And as I say, it should be very much a triumphant occasion. But now time to look at one of the big issues in the blindness community that has been talked about ad nauseum on all the various lists over the last week or so, and will no doubt be a talking point for some time to come. I refer, of course, to the NFB's decision to file a suit against America Online, which is not only an internet service provider, of course, but it's also an online service. Many people don't perhaps understand that term. I guess those of us who go back to the days where CompuServe was bigger than the internet, as it were, in terms of usage, understand that there is a distinction between an online service and the internet. And of course, AOL does offer some services that you have to be a member of AOL to get. They're not just accessible on their website, such as the different channels and the celebrity chats and the buddy lists and different things that are unique to the AOL online service, which of course predates the internet. AOL started back in 1985. Before we get into this, and we'll speak with Curtis Chong shortly, I would like to say that I did make extensive efforts to get AOL on the program so that they could give their perspective. I phoned them because I thought that they'd probably get hundreds of email messages a day. Got in touch with their PR people. They told me to send an email to the office of Steve Case, their chairman and chief executive. I did that. I got what I consider to be probably an autoresponder reply saying, yeah, we'll get back to you sometime. They never did, and obviously that's regrettable, but they were given every opportunity to appear on Blindline and give their perspective. Having said that, time to introduce Curtis Chong. He's the director of the technological developments at the NFB, and I began by talking with Curtis about why AOL and why now.
I suppose one reason is obviously that AOL is ubiquitous and it's large, and by virtue of its size and the fact that it's promoting its software everywhere, we felt that the time was right to go after AOL. There's another dimension, of course, to this, which is that AOL, unlike many other so-called internet service providers, requires you to use proprietary software in order to go after their system. So you take those two things and the long-standing sort of lack of activity in the accessibility front with respect to AOL, and I think those all combine to contribute to our decision finally to launch into the lawsuit.
As someone who hasn't experienced AOL, of course, being in New Zealand and they haven't made it here, I'm interested in knowing what services are available on AOL that aren't available anywhere else and that are consequently denied to blind people.
Well, let me put it like this way, Jonathan. AOL may not have any service that you couldn't find on the internet with sufficient hunting and research. I'll grant that. However, what it does do is it places access to all of these services in one screen. Now, let me, I don't know all the AOL services, so I'll give you a rough example. I mean, if you're an AOL customer and you log into AOL, you get this welcome screen, and on there, for example, you have these 19, what they call channels of information, which are possibly remarkably similar to what you would see on Internet Explorer if you brought up those channels. You have a news channel, you have an entertainment channel, and you know, when I mean channel, I mean just basically to go to pages that will give you information about those categories. You have a selection, for example, to invoke parental control, which essentially allows you to control where your children go when they use AOL, and a whole host of other things. I suppose the big difference between traditional internet access and AOL is that all of these services can be viewed, or at least known to exist, by looking at one screen, as opposed to having to keep track of a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, it's like having your stereo put together for you all at once, as opposed to having to worry about the tape deck and the CD player and the video player and the phonograph as separate pieces. And that is the difference. But I would say that a savvy internet user would probably find AOL not exceptionally different from surfing the web.
You've obviously had some contacts with AOL before you reach the point where you've decided that a lawsuit is the only remaining option. I take it that that contact has either been limited or unsatisfactory in terms of its outcomes.
The contact has been of this nature. The people I have talked to at AOL have all made very positive noises about accessibility. Noises. Last fall, when I wrote my first letter to AOL, specifically describing what was wrong with the software and how they might fix it, and offering the services of our International Braille and Technology Center for their technical experts to come and visit and sit down with us and talk substance, I actually got one individual from AOL to go as far as calling me up on the phone and saying, gee, I think that's a great idea. We'd like to come for a visit. How about in January? Well, January came and went, February came and went, March came and went, April came and went. I got tied up with other things and didn't turn my attention back to AOL for a few months, and nothing happened. And so finally, when I did turn my attention back to AOL in September, it turns out that what happened was nothing. The person that I had been talking to had left the company. He was gone. A senior vice president wrote me back with a cryptic note saying, we think we have good news for you. And I said, what good news? I really would like to know. And he said, somebody will get in touch with you. And lo and behold, nobody did. And so what we've dealt with essentially is a relationship where they make nice noises. They've made nice noises in the press, too, incidentally. I gather they've been quoted now as saying that the next version of AOL will be usable by the blind. So you see, it's not as if they came out and actually attacked us or said, you people are stupid, you know, you're not going to have accessible software. They say, oh yeah, we want stuff to be accessible. And then when you try to dig a little deeper to find out what's going on, you find, well, there's nothing to ask because you don't know who the right person is to talk to anymore. So we've not seen any software, we've not seen any designs, we don't have the sense that there's a person out there who really understands what the needs of the blind are with respect to AOL. What we have are a lot of public relations people saying, we really want AOL to be accessible, and that's it.
What actually constitutes accessibility? This is always a question that vexes me a little, because you hear people talking about certain software or certain websites that are inaccessible, allegedly, on an email list quite regularly, and then in a day or two,
yes,
you have a blind person coming back saying, what on earth are you talking about? I use this piece of software or this website all the time. I mean, are there actually totally blind people using AOL successfully with a screen reader, or are there absolutely zero blind people doing that?
I think it's not zero. I think it's really small in comparison to the total number. I have received notes from individual blind people who tell me that they use AOL with, say, JAWS for Windows. And then when I quiz a couple of them to say, what exactly are you doing, it turns out what they're doing are the very basic things. Email, which you can sort of do with a fair amount of manipulation. And one person even went as far as to post on one internet list saying that he had written some scripts for AOL and was using AOL quite nicely, thank you very much. So, to me, that does not constitute accessibility. If a couple of very savvy people can use a piece of software, let's not even get into the efficiency question for the moment, that doesn't constitute accessibility. What I think constitutes accessibility is that it should be relatively easy, and that, again, this is all subjective, of course, it should be relatively easy for a piece of software to be learned and used by a fair number of people who have to use it. Because obviously you and I both know that you have some people who use computers who are very good at it, you have some people who are fair at it, and you have some people who have no business using a computer but yet have to because of the way their life is. And so not every piece of software will be accessible to 100% of the population, but it should be accessible to the broadest number with relative ease and with without having to require the customer to do a programming or to contract to have programming done just so that they can use the system. Now, I will be the first to admit that sometimes our accessibility problems are in fact resolved by increased intelligence on the part of the screen reader. I mean the screen access software. As a matter of fact, if you look at most of the software we're using today, I suspect that most of the reason why software is, quote, accessible, unquote, to the blind today is not because we got a whole lot of cooperation from the commercial software developer, but that the screen readers decided that a piece of software was sufficiently popular or sufficiently widely used that they should try to develop some workarounds to make it so that their customers could access it. I think that's unfortunate. I believe the trend is changing, but I don't think that we're near a broadly based commercial adoption of practices which help the commercial developers to make their software usable by the blind. The burden has always fallen on blind people to either change their practices or on screen access companies to modify their software. And only now do you begin to see glimmerings of commercial software being changed or designers coming to people saying, what do I do to make sure my software can be used by the blind? But it's only a glimmering right now.
I'm not aware of any screen access software vendor that ships their product with configuration files for AOL. Is that because they haven't been asked to do it, or because the software is so inaccessible that the vendors have thrown their hands up in horror at the prospect?
Well, based on some of the background information which I have, which I can't, you know, say publicly, I would say that it's probable that they probably made some valiant attempts at first. I remember talking to Ted Henner one time way back in the old days when AOL was running on Windows 3.1, and he had mentioned to me that, you know, that they had done some work to make the software accessible. I suspect what happened after that, and I realize this is only a suspicion, not based on any hard information, is that when AOL came out with the next version, they made enough changes that the screen access company was pretty much compelled to have to do all the work all over again. I have talked to one blind person who is very savvy with computers who said that he actually went to the trouble of labeling all the icons for a particular version of AOL and actually sort of got it working, and then AOL came out with the next release, and then all of a sudden a lot of his labeling just went by the wayside. So I think some attempts have been made, but I think the nature of the way the information is put on the screen and the fact that some of the services are what we call dynamic displays. You know, we as blind people, I think, are used to dealing with static screens. In other words, screens that stay still when we want to read them. And what I'm told, anyway, by those who have worked with AOL is that some of the AOL services are not static. They change quite a bit, and they change without even notifying you that they're going to change, on the theory that you're visually looking at the screen and can spot when the change happens. So I think that some attempts have been made, and I do believe, based on what I've heard, that mostly the attempts have worked for a short period. I've read one note from one blind person who said that he has scripts for AOL right now, and as a matter of fact, he tried it with version 5, and he said he got them working, and my answer to that is I'm perfectly happy that he did that. I would wish then that a way could be found to make those public so that more people could have access to it. I would also wish, though, that AOL would pay attention and try not to make it so hard for us to get at its software.
Yeah. One of the questions that comes to my mind when I hear you talking about this is that we have had very similar problems with Microsoft when you think how long it took us to get access to Windows 3.1, and then Windows 95 came out and changed the whole ballpark. And there are still hundreds of Microsoft products where the product teams are not implementing active accessibility because of alleged instabilities. Why not hit Microsoft over the head as well?
Well, I think Microsoft is, I think there's a little difference between Microsoft and AOL in one sense. I mean, I'll agree with you 100%. They haven't done a perfect job. Not all their products are accessible. As a matter of fact, I'll bet the majority of them are not quite as accessible as we want them to be. We would certainly like to have more, and we'd even like the ones that we are using to be more accessible than they are today. I mean, take Word, for example. How many of us feel really, truly comfortable that we can produce a document other than left justified with centered headings in Word with its speech and know that the format really looks right? And my bet would be that most of us don't. Some of us old-timers will still resort to some of the older software programs if we're writing a document that requires any complexity to it. And that is something, of course, that Microsoft is aware of. The difference between Microsoft and AOL at this stage is that AOL is where Microsoft was probably 7 to 8 years ago, where internally AOL may have, I don't know this for a fact, a champion somewhere that is saying, you know, we got to do something about accessibility. You remember in the old days, Greg Lowney, I think, was the only person at Microsoft who was saying, we have to do something about accessibility. And everybody says, yeah, Greg, sure thing, go right ahead. You know, and but after a lot of people made a lot of noise, and they had a big summit in 1995. We remember that. We were all there. You know, Microsoft is devoting, you know, they have 35-plus people in the accessibility group, and, yeah, it's not perfect, and, yeah, they make mistakes. We all remember IE4, Internet Explorer 4, when that came out, and how everybody just went after them because they took some stuff off that we'd sort of gotten used to with IE3. That's a mistake they'll never forget. And but at least now there's a line of communication open between the blind and Microsoft and the other disability community, parts of the disability community and Microsoft. They have people whose job is to deal with accessibility, and they're trying to do the right thing, albeit not perfectly, but their feet are now on the road, and they're walking along the road toward full access. AOL has yet to get onto the road and has yet to start walking, and that is the difference.
So this is actually an important precedent-setting test case under American law, is that correct?
Yes, it is, actually, because I think this is the first time that an Internet service provider is being sued on the ADA, and not only that, but we're going on the basis that the service that this company provides is, under the Americans with Disability Act, a public accommodation. In the past, I think public accommodations have traditionally been thought of as physical plant, building, that sort of thing, where you have to have ramps. And what we're saying is there are other public accommodations which are not physical but are equally as important as buildings, and access to information services is one of them. And so that's why we're dealing with this particular issue that way. So if nothing else, I will say this. Even if we don't go to court today, or even if no decision gets made, we've already gotten a lot of good use out of this work, because the issue of accessibility, the issue of access to the Internet, and the very fact that blind people do in fact use computers in a lot of the same ways that sighted people do, never before was made as public as it is now. I'm encouraged by that, because one of the problems that we, of course, face as blind people is this whole notion in society that the blind have very little, if anything, to contribute, and that we should be content to sit at home and draw public benefits and not worry about going to work, and heaven knows we shouldn't even worry about using the computer. And what we're doing is to say now blind people are working, blind people use the computer, and we want to be working alongside everybody else in terms of this information age. We want to be up there. We want to get into the 21st century on a level playing field with everybody else. And we're here, and we need to be taken into consideration. And that, to me, is a big plus, to even have gotten that much word out.
Yes, it's interesting as to whether this will, in fact, go to court. The Federation is considered, I guess, in blindness terms, a relatively wealthy organization. The AOL wealth, however, makes the Federation's pale into insignificance. Do you think they'll just wear you guys out? I mean, is it ever really going to go to court and get settled?
I wouldn't want to speculate on that. My hope is that it won't. And as a matter of fact, if I were to bet, I would bet that it won't be like that. But I can't really say, because that gets into the legal area, which I'm not really conversant in. I am sure hoping that discussions can happen. I'm hoping that the whole question of accessibility will be dealt with now in a meaningful way by AOL, and that they will talk to the players in the area of accessibility to the blind, so that, in fact, if they really are doing something, we will become aware of it. I mean, how many of us know really what the heck is going on inside of AOL, or what design ideas they are considering internally? I don't think any of us know that, because, you know, it's internal. You know, companies have secrets, as they should, and so therefore we just don't know. And the problem I have is if they do this work in a vacuum, and if they keep developing something which they think is going to be accessible, they may be very surprised. You know, we've seen this happen before with other well-meaning efforts on behalf of the blind, where somebody comes out with this, what they think is a great product, and then they wonder why blind people get mad at them, because the product wasn't designed right, or it's insulting to the blind, or it doesn't really meet the real need that the blind perceive that they have. And so I'm hoping AOL won't make that kind of a mistake, because if they do, it will just increase the level of tension that we already have.
How did these things work? Did the Federation contact AOL just before filing the suit and say, well, we're giving you one last chance, unless we have some meaningful dialogue, we're suing you? Or did AOL just suddenly find the lawsuit on their doorstep?
I think it was more of the latter. They just suddenly found the lawsuit on their doorstep. I will say that one of the things that we have had is a lot of complaints from our members about AOL over the last couple of years, which have sort of been steadily mounting as AOL becomes more pervasive. And so it's not a thing that we decided yesterday to do today. I think it's a thing that we sort of considered off and on over time, and sort of took a look at the temperature of the wind, and tried to see how many complaints we were getting from our own people, and also to find out what kind of reactions we were going to get from AOL when we initiated certain communications. And so, as I say, I've written at least two or three letters myself to AOL, each of which have been fairly lengthy and specific, and each of which have offered to work with them to try to have to help develop usable software. And each and every time, the letters that I get are either ignored, or, as they were in the first letter, I'm met with a phone call with very positive feelings, and then somehow nothing seems to happen after that. And since I know that AOL has a ways to go in terms of its awareness of what goes on in the blind community, I'm thinking that this effort that we're doing right now will be a way of sort of helping them to step onto the road and move a little faster and catch up with other people in the industry who already are talking to blind people who know what's going on.
But if blind people can't use AOL, it's not actually shutting them out of the, you know, the information superhighway as such, is it? I mean, maybe the market needs to take care of this. You've got sighted people who, I understand, are saying that AOL is slow, it can be unreliable, it's not really the best ISP in town if you're looking at to use it for that purpose. Surely blind people should just go somewhere where they're wanted.
Well, that is an interesting comment. I have had that comment from other people, and my response to a comment like that would be yes. It's exactly right. I can pick, and have already done so, another internet service provider. So do a lot of other blind people, because we're not sitting around waiting for AOL. We get our access to information the best way that we can. We get our access to the internet the best way that we can. However, if you tell a person in a wheelchair that this restaurant across the street, which doesn't have a ramp, is just as good or is no better than the one that's two blocks away that does have a ramp, and that they ought to feel like it's okay to go to that other restaurant where the ramp is, I think the kind of a reaction you would get from a person like that is, it really doesn't matter whether both restaurants are equal, and it really doesn't matter if the one with the ramp is better than the one that doesn't have a ramp. What really matters is that the restaurant there across the street that I want to go to today doesn't have a ramp, and I think I have a right to be able to go there. And so what you're saying is exactly true. I can go to another internet service provider, but the very fact that I can't go to AOL, that there is a definite real barrier there that prevents me from using AOL the same way that I can use other internet service providers, is enough to tell me that something needs to be done.
Is there a question of moral authority, of credibility for the Federation, and this has been raised a couple of times in different lists, the fact that the NFB has an agreement with and a link to a site that has some major accessibility problems, namely the Greater Good site and the various shops that they have, people are saying, well, you know, if it does go to court, lawyers are bound to pick up on this, that on the one hand, you're touting accessibility principles, and on the other, you're happy to forego those in order to generate some funds for the Federation.
Yeah, that comment has been made by a small handful of people, well, maybe a bigger handful of people on the Internet, about our relationship with Greater Good. I will say that I wasn't involved in those discussions. I agree that there are some problems with the Greater Good website, and I would say that from my perspective, the best way that we can influence Greater Good to improve its website is by doing exactly what we are doing, which is to say to be connected with them and to have the inroads of communication with them so that they can work to improve the problems that we identify as a legitimate Greater Good customer. So, yeah, you know, some people will poke at that, and, you know, people who are critical of us will say that we shouldn't have any relationship at all. But, you know, my answer is the best way for us to improve Greater Good, at least at this stage, based on what we know, is for us to do what we have to work on the accessibility problems. And I'm glad to get suggestions from people, and I have, as a matter of fact, received lots of suggestions from people about how to improve it. And we have gone to Greater Good with a lot of those suggestions, and they have taken some action to, again, not as quickly as we might like, but they have done some improvement, and we're pushing them to make more.
Do you think there's going to be cross-organizational support for the stands that you've taken on AOL? For instance, is the ACB going to come in and support, and any other blindness organizations? Because I guess the one thing that you would want to avoid with something as precedent-setting as this is for different organizations of or even for the blind to be picked off one against the other.
I hope we're not in that kind of a situation. I'm hoping that everybody will work together for the so that we can all sing from the same page, as it were. I can't really tell you what's been happening. I haven't talked to anybody yet from any of the other groups, but we certainly hope that people will not get into this divisive situation, because that would be the worst thing that could ever happen.
Have you had any contact with AOL since the lawsuit was filed? Have they made any attempts to say, well, let's try and sort this thing out peaceably?
I haven't had any communication with AOL.
So do you have a kind of an ideal AOL in mind? If Steve Case or one of his minions gave you a call and said, well, you know, what do you want us to do to get you guys off the case, so to speak, if you pardon the pun, you've got a model in mind that you would suggest to them in terms of what the next version of AOL should look like?
Oh, yeah, I at least I do. I may not have it all the way nailed down to the exact everything, but I'm thinking, for example, that improving their installation software, for example, so that it uses the standard Windows install shield would be a great step in the right direction. Changing the welcome screen, or providing an option where I can hit a shortcut key to get the welcome screen to change into a vertical list of choices, would be a great thing. Finding ways to provide the dynamic information in static screens would be a great thing. In other words, what I think we really want to have happen is for the AOL technical people, the people who are developing this software, to to talk to us, understand how we interact with our access technology, and to make sure before the software leaves the shop that it works with at least two or three screen readers for the blind using proper testing procedures. It seems to me that if we get that far, that will be really great. But I think in terms of the design, that's kind of tough to nail down because who knows what will happen. But I think thinking in terms of lists that you can arrow through would be very nice instead of having to use your mouse cursor to sort of poke around unlabeled graphics. I know that some thought has been given by AOL, at least if you read the between the lines of the press, to a telephone access system where we could take advantage of AOL services over the telephone. I think that's a great idea for those people who don't use computers, whether you're blind or sighted. But I don't think that addresses the question that we've raised. We still need to have an AOL interface that works with our access technology. And I think accessibility is so complex now that it is not sufficient for us to say to developers of technology that you just do follow this checklist and your program will be successful. I think we have to now say to them, if you want to make your stuff accessible, you've got to learn or get somebody to kind of become familiar with how screen reading technology works, and you've got to do your own in-house testing to verify that your stuff is going to work. And I will tell you that I've gotten calls from two or three companies out there already who are not AOL, who have done or are thinking about doing exactly that. In other words, they say, we're going to bring in this program. They say, how much does it cost? I say, oh, about $800. They go, $800? That's nothing. We'll do it. And they say, and we'll test it, and we'll do all of that. And then I say to them, that's great. We just want to make sure that whoever's doing the testing really uses it the way a blind person does, not don't cheat and look at the screen and figure that it's accessible. That's not going to work.
One of the things that interested me in the AOL response was that they were talking about some sort of future plan also that involved text-to-speech software, it sounded like, actually built into their software. And it seems that they haven't quite got it yet, that you know, blind people become familiar with their standard screen reading software and they know how to configure that. And the last thing we want is for each individual program just start having proprietary text-to-speech interfaces with their own commands.
See, here, Jonathan, is a broader issue beyond AOL. I mean, I will tell you that I got letters from them, not written to me, but written to other people, saying, yes, we're looking very hard at text-to-speech and speech-to-text, as you say. And I agree that in the short run, as of today, we want AOL to understand that, in fact, the blind already know about text-to-speech. We use text-to-speech in everything that we do on the computer. Now, speech-to-text is a different question altogether. We don't really care as much about it unless we have other disabilities that we have to worry about. And it's not text-to-speech or speech-to-text that's the issue. What is the issue is access to the screen and compatibility with screen access technology. That method, I don't think AOL seems to have gotten. However, let's look beyond AOL for a second. Are we going to say as blind people that we don't want any application to talk? I don't think so. I think that what we want to say is we want applications that are planning to talk in a way that doesn't get in the way of our screen readers. And what we want also to happen is for applications to talk when we want them to talk in a way that makes sense to us and not just provide meaningless, superfluous, gimmicky speech that really doesn't tell you anything. For example, AOL has some WAV files that are automatically played by the program when you dial in. You know, one of them says, welcome. Well, you know, that's great. I'm glad to know that. And there's another one that says, you've got mail. Okay, now I regard those as gimmicky WAV files that don't give you very useful information, but they're there. And if that's the kind of talking we're going to get out of commercial applications, I'm not interested in that. However, if we're going to get the kind of talking that we get, say, out of IBM Home Page Reader, where they design a very logical user interface with, well, you know, we quibble about whether it's really the best, but, you know, they have a full-fledged talking interface where you can read a web page and all that, or talking interface as in what Kurzweil 1000 does or Open Book Ruby Edition, you know, those are the so-called self-voicing applications. If commercial application developers want to do that, I think that we should find ways to allow that to happen in such a way that our screen reading software doesn't get defeated, you see, because I think the line is shifting, frankly. I think the days when the only speech we ever got came from our screen readers are moving away. We're moving toward, and even Microsoft is moving towards this, whether rightly or wrongly, but the fact is that it is. Look at Windows 2000, they're going to have the narrator now, which will provide sort of a very basic speech to help you get some stuff installed in Windows. So the days of exclusivity as far as speech output is concerned to screen access programs for the blind are moving away. We're headed toward an era where more and more commercial packages will want to talk. And as a matter of fact, Bill Gates, even in one of the speeches that he gave a while ago, talked about natural communication verbally with the computer. And personally, I'm all for it if it doesn't lock us out and if we can still use access technology when that's what we want to do. But those are the two things that have to happen.
What sort of media coverage have you received since filing the suit? Because I've read a couple of stories, and then I went to a website where you can look at a story, and then there's a kind of a message board that's on the site in HTML format. And, you know, if anyone wanted any example of the fact that we have a long way to go, they can have a look at these sorts of message boards where people were saying these people are unreasonable whiners holding us to ransom, the internet's a visual medium and they just have to get real. What's the general feeling that's been received by the NFB to the lawsuit, by the sighted community?
I would say that we have probably received a smattering of calls from people saying that we're being stupid for filing this lawsuit. I would say that the majority of the media that have picked up the story, which has been quite considerable, have been incredibly positive about the idea in terms of the newspapers and the TV stations that have picked it up. I would say, frankly, that yes, any minority group that aspires for equality will get a certain amount of backlash from those people that don't quite get. And, of course, with freedom of speech as it is, they're welcome to their opinion. They can say whatever they like. I would say most of all the reactions that I have been aware of, either through the press, through television, or through the phone calls myself, have been tremendously supportive. That doesn't mean that it's been 100%, but I think the majority has been good.
So you're in this for a long haul? Do you think it's going to take a little while till this get resolved?
Well, you know how legal matters go. Legal matters typically take a while. I'm hoping that that won't be the case here, but, you know, I don't know all there is to know about the legal process. It could take a long time or not. I will just say this. Whenever the National Federation of Blind makes up its mind to engage in a legal battle, which we do, by the way, sparingly, we do hang in there for the long haul.
The National Federation of the Blind's Curtis Chong. If you've just joined us, I'm Jonathan Mosen. You're with Blindline. It's mbsfm.com. We're looking at the NFB's decision to sue America Online, and we've got another couple of perspectives to offer before we take your calls. On to the screen reader industry now. Is the AOL issue an issue for screen reader vendors? Should they be getting their act together? Or is the AOL software just so difficult that it's impossible for the screen reader industry to give us decent access until AOL make some changes? Well, I wanted to talk to a number of screen reader vendors about this issue. Some of them were a bit reticent, and we understand that things are at a bit of a sensitive stage and respect their decision. But one person who was willing to come on the program, and we're very grateful for this, is Doug Joffrey. He's of GW Micro of Fort Wayne, Indiana, the people that make Window Eyes. I began in my recorded interview with Doug by asking him whether there'd been much demand from Window Eyes users for good AOL access.
Actually, quite a few users have asked us to what level they really wanted, or if it's just curiosity, or if that's one option that they could go through the internet. But we have had a substantial amount of people ask us if we have access to it, and unfortunately our reply has been no, and I don't know of anything that really does at this point.
So it's really not a question of somebody spending a couple of days writing some very good set files. It just at the moment can't be done given the way the program is structured. Is that what your assessment is?
That's correct. To really do it right, something needs to be done on the AOL side, yeah.
Dialogue then between AOL and GW Micro, has any occurred?
We have tried in the past to do some things, and nothing really had panned out. We couldn't get a hold of the right people. But just recently, we were contacted by AOL, and they are very interested in working with us. Actually, it seems like they're interested in working with some of the top screen readers in general to make AOL accessible. So, yes, we have been recently contacted by them, and they seem very interested in working with us.
Recently, to the extent that it was after the filing of the lawsuit by the Federation?
Right. At the time that they contacted me, I was not aware of that lawsuit, but when I was aware of it, I found out it was, it did occur previous to them calling us, yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like this is a response from AOL that they may be starting to take the issue seriously and that perhaps this thing could be settled out of court.
Absolutely. They're taking it very seriously, and they are doing everything that they can, I think, right at this point to become accessible, yeah.
Well, Curtis Chong of the NFB, who we had on the program just a little while ago, said that, you know, that they have had phone calls before filing the suit from AOL, at least one phone call where, you know, somebody from there said, great idea, let's get together, let's crack this accessibility thing. And despite the enthusiasm, nothing happened. Are you sort of confident that actually this isn't a fly-by-night thing, that they are really going to deal with it this time?
I think at this point, because a lot of times we work with other companies as well, where you talk to an individual, a tech support person or whoever, who says, yes, this is great, let's do it. But obviously they don't have the authority to do that. And at this point with AOL, we are talking with key people, those that can make the final decision on whether or not things should be done. So in order to get anywhere, you've got to be able to talk to those people, and we are doing that right now.
So when you've got a big product like this, what's the format? What actually happens to make this program accessible? Do you guys go to a meeting and sit down and thrash it out, or will they give you a new version of the software on a non-disclosure basis that you test? How does it work?
At this point, until we, and I have not done this yet, but I have the huge, I don't know, 18-page non-disclosure agreement that I'm requested to sign. And once I sign that, then we will get into the nitty-gritty details about what and how to proceed. But my guess would be that we would somehow, whether we physically get together or whatever, but we need to all sit down as a group and discuss what the exact problems are, what the limitations are, and then do some brainstorming to try to determine what the best way is to resolve the issue.
And does the screen reader industry as a whole sit down and talk about those things, or would AOL deal with one access company at a time?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how they're going to be doing this, but my guess would be that they will do them separate. Initially, it might be nice to do it as a group, just kind of an open discussion, and then maybe some of the details. But the implementation that I would like to see them do is a generic solution that could be used across the board. I don't want them to get into writing specifics for WindowEyes or specifics for a Screen Reader X, and I hope that that is the approach that they will go with.
Given WindowEyes' track record with using active accessibility so successfully, you may well be recommending that solution?
I think in the long term we may have to do that, but some of my initial comments with them are that they want to get something going quickly, and implementing MFA retroactively like this may not be a quick solution. So in the end, that may be the way to go, but right now I'm getting the impression they want something quick so that they can get possibly out of this lawsuit and make their product accessible.
Do you foresee the Federation's participation in this process?
How do I see it, do you think?
Yes, do you think that they will actually be a part of the process that you and other screen reader vendors are embarking upon, or are they going to sort of have to sit on the sideline and wait and see what comes out the other end? Because I would imagine the Federation won't take kindly to that.
Yeah. I don't know, I mean, because obviously this is going to get very technical and things like that, so they might be on the some sort of reviewing panel or something to watch the progress as it's happening and verify that things are working, both on our end and their end, and maybe be involved in that respect. But on a technical level, I don't anticipate their participation.
How long do you think it's going to take until we see an accessible AOL software package?
That's a real difficult one, until we do get in and really find out what the problems are. And part of our problems are, obviously, we internally as GW Micro have a lot of commitments ourselves with limited resources. And so we're looking at how we can juggle this around. Do we need to bring in extra resources? Is AOL going to be able to help us with that, to bring in some extra systems? So far, it looks good that they will be able to do that. So if we can bring in some outside help, either permanently, temporarily, whatever, they can deal with this, then obviously we can get it going quicker. I get the impression from AOL that they do want this to happen as possible.
Just so that you don't get hounded for a long time, non-disclosure agreements, what kind of restrictions do they place on you in terms of communicating with us, the WindowWise users, about the progress that you're making?
Typically, non-disclosure agreements say that anything that is not public knowledge cannot be discussed. So it would put a pretty good damper on it, other than saying things are going well or things like that, but get specific and say this is what's going to be done or this is how it's going to happen, we would not be able to discuss that.
Do you have much negotiating power as the screen reader vendor as to the strictness of such an agreement, or do you generally just sign what you're given? Is it ever negotiated?
I imagine it's possible to be negotiated, but in some terms I understand where they're coming from, and I've not seen anything in this particular agreement that is any different than any others that we find with Microsoft or some of the other companies.
Will you be encouraging AOL, when the time is right, to give beta copies of any new software to blind people so that it can be tested out in the field before they triumphantly claim that they've solved the problem?
Absolutely. That's a must. And I will push as hard as possible to do that.
That's GW Micro's Doug Joffray. I'm Jonathan Mosen. This is Blindline. We're looking at America Online and the NFB's lawsuit against them for alleged inaccessibility. Before we go to your calls, we have one more interview, and that is with the president of the American Council of the Blind, Paul Edwards. Are we going to see cross-organizational support on this issue? Is there going to be unity in the blind community? Paul Edwards says, no, there isn't.
Well, as you know, Jonathan, we're as concerned about entities that aren't accessible as any other organization is. And in fact, our office called the National Federation of the Blind just before they announced that their lawsuit, when we began to hear rumors of it, in order to be sure that they understood the current situation, because what AOL has done is to contract with WGBH in Boston to make AOL accessible to folks who are blind. And WGBH has a fairly long history of working on accessible technology. So essentially, our view at the moment is that AOL was already taking affirmative steps to deal with the issue of accessibility for blind folks, and the suit seems to us to be, at least on the face of it, somewhat frivolous and likely not to result in anything but unnecessary pressure, since AOL was already acting in an appropriate way.
But are the steps AOL taking actually the correct steps? Because in the response that I saw that they gave to the media, they made comments about making programs talk directly, some sort of text-to-speech interface or even an email-by-telephone solution. Nothing about, and nothing demonstrating an understanding of, the need to make the AOL software work in conjunction with existing screen reading technology.
I think what we're dealing with is a left hand in a large corporation not knowing what the right hand doeth. At least that would certainly be my hope. Obviously, had AOL not been taking affirmative steps, ACD would have looked very hard at becoming a part of the NFB suit. We're as concerned as any other consumer organization needs to be about the fact that the largest company is not doing a good job at making themselves accessible to people who are blind. But we believe, at this point anyway, that what's happening with WGBH are appropriate steps and will result in significant improvements of the accessibility of AOL. So at this point, we're certainly not prepared to regard the suit with AOL as anything but premature.
Doug Joffrey of GW Micro told us just before you came on the program to talk about this that GW Micro was contacted by AOL to discuss working on the accessibility of their software after the NFB filed the suit. Do you think that's a coincidence, or are they responding quickly now as a result of this action?
I think probably it's both. I think AOL is very sensitive to bad publicity, and I'm sure that the NFB suit will probably have some positive side effects. My concern is if we set a precedent as blindness organizations of saying to entities like AOL, if you're not moving fast enough, we're going to sue you even though you're affirmatively moving, I think we may persuade organizations to begin to look at a backlash, and that would be my concern with the AOL suit. So in general, I mean, I'm supportive of the idea of accessibility and supportive as well of the idea that AOL needs to be doing a better job and that this suit will probably encourage them to do that.
Now, the NFB said that they approached AOL quite some time ago and they got an enthusiastic response saying, yeah, let's do it, let's get on with it. There was a tentative meeting set and it never happened, and since then AOL appears not to have talked much to the NFB. So are you saying that the NFB actually knew about the WGBH progress and that perhaps the reaction is because NFB feel that they've been shut out?
I'm not prepared to make that statement categorically because I don't have the evidence to support it. What I am prepared to say is that we contacted NFB to be certain they knew about the WGBH connection before the suit was filed.
What do you think about the precedent-setting nature of this lawsuit, the fact that if it can be established that a place like AOL is a public accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act, that this is actually a really significant development?
I think that's absolutely accurate. My belief is that this may not be the kind of case to test it on because of the immense economic value and power that AOL has. Clearly, if they decide that they don't want to see a precedent set, what they may well do is make it very difficult for that precedent to be set. My view is that if you find a nice, quiet little case where you can get a company to agree that it perceives itself as a public accommodation and get the court to accept that, you're going to be much more likely to be successful than you are tackling a mega company like AOL.
I suppose the flip side of that coin is, though, that quiet little cases can generally involve quiet little companies, and that it may not be considered a reasonable accommodation for smaller companies to make their facilities accessible on the information superhighway.
Well, I think it's a stretch, frankly, to suggest that there's coverage of the information superhighway in the ADA. Most lawyers that I've spoken with would argue that in fact it's not covered, and that the only real handle that we have is Section 255 of the Communications Act, the Telecommunications Act. And even there, since that refers directly to telecommunications services, there's been a pretty careful effort made by the FCC to imply that specifically excludes the Internet. So, I guess my concern is if we're trying to set a precedent in an area where the law isn't strong, are we going to end up standing a good chance of losing and perhaps retarding progress towards real legal solutions of the problem, when what we actually need perhaps to be doing is looking at creating some legislative change or creating some customary law by working directly with companies.
But if it did go to court and you were asked to testify in favor of the lawsuit, what would you do?
Probably, if I were asked to testify on the accessibility of AOL, I certainly would indicate that it has serious problems. If I were asked to testify as to whether the lawsuit is necessary and relevant, I don't think there's enough evidence yet, because I haven't seen exactly how far along the WGBH stuff is, how much commitment there is from AOL to implement it once the decision has been made. And I think there are a range of other questions that are still out there to be answered. Suffice it to say that we're sympathetic to the NFB's effort to create greater accessibility in the largest internet service provider in the country.
So there you have it. Is the AOL issue a real one? Is the NFB doing the blind community a favor? Or is this a waste of time? The jury is still out. And in fact, it may come down to a jury of 12 to make the ultimate decision.